Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Kaf, Chapter 20 of Melachim Bet. Let me say at the beginning what I said at the end of yesterday's shiur. First, let me apologize for going long yesterday. I try to keep this to half an hour, but sometimes the chapters are too rich to allow me to do so. Let me mention that I also welcome any feedback, any suggestions, any ideas, any questions for a further clarification. My email is grothst at gmail.com. So Perek Pasuk Aleph begins by Yamim Haheim. Chalach Hizkiyahu Lamut, Vayavo Elav Yishayahu Ben Amotz Hanavi, Vayomer Elav, Kuamar Hashem Tzav Leveitecha, Gimeitata Velo Tichye. In those days, and Rashi says that in those days, this is Chazal's tradition, that in those days means 3 days before Sancheiriv is going to be destroyed, or Sancheiriv will have the disaster that will send him back to Nineveh, that will send him out of Eretz Yisrael forever. That's because Rashi is going to assume, and Chazal are assuming, that at the end of this parak, when he is told that after 3 days he will go up to Beit Hashem, they assume that's when he goes up to Beit Hashem with the scrolls from Sancheiriv and spreads them out before Hashem. So a lot of events now have been happening along the way. Rav Shakeh came before that, and then was lured elsewhere and sent the message. So however long that took, the arrival of the message from Sancheiriv, which says, I'm going off now to fight, to battle Tirhaka, the king of Cush, and don't think that God is saving you. That whole message arrives at Chizkiyahu's palace on the third day of his illness. So however you time the prior events, that's what you have going on here. So he's ill to the point of death, and Yishayahu comes to him and tells him, you're going to actually die, so set your affairs in order. Now, we already know, because we read yesterday's parak, the previous parak, parak Yutet, we already know that it's going to turn out well for him. But if you just think about what's going on at this juncture, and then we watch Chizkiyahu's reaction, we see the depth of his faith. Here he is, bedridden, and at this point, while it may be true that he's had temporary respite from Rav Shakeh, he believed in Hashem, and he had temporary rest because Rav Shakeh and Sancheiriv really went away, or on the way away, are moving out. He's got both a personal crisis and a national crisis, a governmental crisis going on at the same time. So this is truly a test of his faith and a test of what's going on here. And I think it's plausible to argue that it wasn't clear it was going to go this way. So we already noted that it's when he davens to Hashem with the scrolls open that Hashem promises him that he will then destroy Sancheiriv. So the Radaket said maybe Hashem didn't mention that originally because he didn't want Sancheiriv to hear about it and try to maybe avoid it in some way or do tshuva in some way. Possibly. Or possibly the jury was still out, meaning there has not yet been a promise. There's been a promise that he wouldn't currently come to Yerushalayim and destroy Yerushalayim, but the promise that he would go away permanently happens somewhat later, because Chizkiyahu feels the need to go to the Beit HaMikdash and pray, and that's when he gets destroyed. So it's this juncture of events in this, and this is at the midway point of Chizkiyahu's reign, because we're going to find out that he's going to get 15 extra years. Since he rules for 29 years, it means this was in the 14th year of his reign. So the 14th year of his reign, midway through, Chizkiyahu has a tremendous crisis. He's got the threat of Sancheiriv, who in fact did exile the Northern Kingdom, and he's got this illness which Yishayahu tells him he's going to die. Second interesting point is that Chazal's tradition is that when Yishayahu tells him he's going to die, Chazal understand that Yishayahu emphasizes it doubly. He says, Kimetata and Velo Tichyeh. He's going to die in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And Chazal attributed to the fact that he didn't have any children. The Radak notes that, in fact, we can see that he didn't have children because Menashe, the child of his who will take over the throne after him, is only 12. So Chizkiyahu gets 15 years added to his life. And Menashe is 12, that means he wasn't born until 3 years after this event, after this incident. So the fact that he didn't have children is clear in the Pesukim. But that this should be so significant an issue, that is not fully explained. So it seems to be, or Chazal present a scenario in which Chizkiyahu and Yishayahu have a debate, have a discussion, in which Chizkiyahu says, I didn't have children because I saw they were going to be Rishayim, they're going to be evil. So Yishayahu says, you don't have that right to make that decision, and you have to have the children anyway. And so Chizkiyahu agrees, and Chizkiyahu accepts the judgment. But that's what's going on. So that idea that Chizkiyahu had made a decision, apparently without consultation with Yishayahu, not to have children, to refrain from having children, because he sees, or he has a tradition, or he has a knowledge, however he has that knowledge, that the children will be evil. And in fact, let's not belittle the accuracy of Chizkiyahu's realization, because in fact, Menashe is, as we'll see in chapter 21, at least for most of his life, in fact evil. Terribly evil. Remarkably evil. So evil, there's a debate among Chazal as to whether Menashe has a share in the world to come, is at all salvageable. So Chizkiyahu has this idea, and he's told that he's not allowed to have that idea. So that question of what ideas you're allowed to have, what ideas you're not allowed to have, where you're allowed to express your attempt to shape the world, the future of the world, the way that you want to, that's a complicated topic. And here we're finding that Chizkiyahu is being told that not only is he not allowed to do it the way that he did it, but the way that he did it is so criminal, is so problematic, that he in fact is going to lose his share in the world to come unless he rectifies it. So that's what happens. Yeshayahu leaves and says, this is what's going on. Yeah, when you study the book of Yeshayahu, it'll be worth sort of thinking about Yeshayahu's personality, how this must have affected him. But what we have here is that in Pasuk Bet Vayasev et panav lakir vayipol Hashem leimor, Yeshayahu leaves and Chizkiyahu turns to the wall. Gemara says this is a source for suggesting that you should have nothing stopping between you and a wall when you dive into Hashem, so you have nothing getting in the way of your thoughts. Vayipol Hashem vayomar, and he davens to Hashem, saying, "Ana Hashem, zechor na, eit Hashem ha'italachti lefanecha be'emet uvelevav shalem, ve'atov be'inecha asiti vayev Chizkiyahu b'kri gadol." He says, "Please, Hashem, listen to me, Hashem. Remember that I have gone before you in truth and with a whole heart, and I have done what is good in your eyes." And he cries a great crying. So, what's not clear is what is the point of this prayer, right? He doesn't say, "Please let me live." He doesn't say, "God, help me out here. I'm in trouble." He says, "Remember what I've done, and that I've done everything that's good in your eyes." And he cries a great cry. Now, there's some equivocality. There's some equivocation. Or Chazal are not completely clear as to whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's just not clear. He's going to get the answer in a positive way. So in that sense, it's a good thing. It's obviously a good thing. But Avot and Rabbi Natan notes that there are three who cry and get their prayers heard by God: Hagar, and Esav, and Chizkiyahu. So with Hagar and Esav, I don't know that that's company that it's so wonderful for Chizkiyahu to be grouped with, right? There are three who cried and get answered. Hagar, we're sort of surprised that she gets answered, because after all, she's Hagar. And the truth is, it's not even necessarily Hagar. If you read the psukim there, it seems like maybe it's Yishmael who gets answered. Yishmael gets answered because at the moment that he's crying, he is good. And that's what the Malachim say. It's a Rashi and Chumash. The Malachim say, "How are you answering him?" He says, "Well, right now he's good. So I have to deal with him ba'asher husham." That's the source of that famous phrase, that we deal with people ba'asher husham as they are now, rather than as we suspect or have reason to believe they will be. So too with Esav. Same idea. So the answer of Chizkiyahu's prayer here seems it's good for Chizkiyahu, and then he gets 15 more years, but there seems to be some tinging of problematicness to it, right? And on the other hand, the Ramban notes on Chumash, and this is characteristic of the Ramban, or an important piece of the Ramban's theology, the Ramban notes on Chumash that when the Jews are doing good or doing well, they are really above the laws of nature, and they don't need doctors, they don't need anything like that. So then he offers this as an example. When Chizkiyahu was ill, he davens to Hashem, and he gets better. And the psukim blame others, in Divrei Yamim, for people who get ill, and they don't consult with Hashem. They only look to the Rofim, to the doctors. And that when you have a time for natural medicine, the Ramban believes, whatever natural medicine was in his time, whenever you have to consult with natural medicine, that's a proof that there is something wrong in your time. Because when things are going right, you don't need that whatsoever. That connects interestingly to Gemara Sanhedrin, that when Chizkiyahu says "Vatov ve'enecha asiti," right? No, it's not there. Somewhere else where they say that Chizkiyahu was gonez sefer rofim, that one of the things that Chizkiyahu had done that he was proud of, and that the Gemara praises him for, is that he got rid of Sefer Rufim, that the Jews had been relying on a book of medicine they had, whatever it was. It was apparently very effective, and he got rid of it. And the reason he got rid of it was that by virtue of having this book, people weren't turning to Hashem when they got ill. And that shows the flip side of medicine. When medicine is too good, people come to believe that everything is natural, and they don't trust in Hashem. It is ironic to watch Chizkiyahu ill, and there had once upon a time been a Sefer Rifuot, and he doesn't say, and this is part of, I think, what saves him, or what shows Hashem that he has the right to be saved, he doesn't say, oh, Hashem, if I only had not been Nigonez Sefer Rifuot, I would be okay now, I could just consult Sefer Rifuot. He turns to Hashem and he says, V'tovenech asiti, he recognizes, or he still claims, he's still proud to say, that this thing that he did was a good thing, and was the right action to take. So that might be part of Chizkiyahu's greatness, that he's able to see that the actions that he took were good, even in a time of stress, even in a time when certainly many others would be bemoaning the error of now being what we would call hoist by their own pitar, being caught up by their own actions, so that they have taken away from themselves the thing of salvation. Chizkiyahu doesn't do that. He knows that his salvation is in Hashem, and he turns to Hashem, and he cries a great crying. Vayhi Yeshayahu lo yatza ha'ir ha'chatzer ha'tichona. And so Yeshayahu hadn't even left the lower gate, the lower court, or the middle court, sorry. Udvar Hashem haya elav lemor, and the word of Hashem comes back to him, saying, Shuv ve'amartel Chizkiyahu negid ami, go back and say to Chizkiyahu, the ruler of my nation, Komar Hashem elokei David aveicha, this is what Hashem, the God of your forefather David, has said, Shemati tvilatecha, I've heard your prayer, Ra'iti dimatecha, I've seen your tears, Hinni rofeilach, I'm going to heal you, Bayom hashlishi tala beit Hashem, you'll be so healed so quickly, on the third day you'll be able to come to the Beit HaMikdash, which again we said is the day that he prays about Sancheiru. Yosif Saftil Yamecha Chameshes Veshana. And I will add to your days 15 years. This is a debate in Chazal that Radak mentions, as we've noted on other occasions, that there's a debate in Chazal as to whether this is from his own life that he's been having added to him, or if he's adding new years. So that's the question, as to whether you're born with a certain set limit that you may or may not reach, or whether it's even possible to live longer than had been planned when you were born. Interesting debate, but not so relevant to the themes of this parak. I'm going to save you from the hands of the king of Ashur, the Eta Yerazot, and the city, the Mani, and I'm going to protect the city, as we saw in the last chapter, for my own sake. In other words, the people will know that Hashem is the ruler of the universe, and also for the sake of David, my servant. So Yeshayahu says, take a sort of a pack, a cake of figs, and put them on the lesion, and they do that, and it heals. He says, I want a sign that I'm going to get better. So it's kind of odd that he has a sign, because he asks for a sign because he's already starting to get better. They put the cake of Te'inim, they put the figs on him, so why is he asking for a sign, and yet Yeshayahu is going to just give him the sign. So the Radak says he thinks that part of the reason that he had the right to ask for a sign is because Yeshayahu said the gzira is gzira kfula ki meitata velo tichya, he emphasized it, and then so he worried that maybe when Yeshayahu comes back it was just to try to comfort him, make him feel better, and then he healed that particular lesion, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't have a relapse and die. So that gets into an issue that we've sort of talked about before, is to what extent and when are prophecies ironclad and unchangeable, and when is it the prophecies have the room to be altered or to be mitigated or anything like that. So here, the Radak is suggesting that Chizkiyahu is worried that this is an unchangeable and alterable gzeira, and therefore he says, no, if you're telling me it's going to change, I want an oath. I need a sign. So, in Pasuk Tet, Yeshayahu agrees, V'yom Yeshayahu zelecha ha'ot meit Hashem, ki yasa Hashem at the devar she'a diber, he'll be the sign that Hashem will do what he has spoken. Halach atzil eser ma'alot, im yeshuv eser ma'alot. The shadow has gone 10 steps, or 10 degrees, there were a set of steps that they knew they were talking about. And as the sun has moved over, the shadow's already gone 10 degrees. So, if you... or in a sundial perhaps, but do you want it to go forward, or do you want it more, 10 degrees more than it should, just all of a sudden move, or to move backwards? It's easy to go forward 10 degrees, let it go backward 10 degrees, that's really a sign. So Yeshayahu says, okay, he calls out to Hashem, and the shadow does move back 10 degrees, then it had gone down 10 degrees, and b'ma'alot Achaz, so there's two possibilities. One possibility is that Achaz made the sundial that we're talking about. The other possibility Chazal suggests is that in the days of Achaz, when Achaz had died, there had been another miracle, not well noted, where the sun had moved more rapidly than it was ordinarily supposed to. And Chazal say it would have done that because Hashem wanted to forestall or to limit the possibilities of eulogizing of Achaz, who, as we've seen, was an extremely evil king. So the way that Hashem did that was by making the day be shorter. So he moved the sun forward 10 degrees, and that forestalled that possibility. So now we get the 10 degrees back. It's sort of like jet lag. It's not jet lag. It's like when you travel and you lose an hour one way and you gain it back the other way, or the other way around. You gain the hour and you lose it the other way. So that's what happens here too. And so he's healed. And so that's the O. And then we know the rest of the story now. So now we have the complete picture of this event, and we see how complicated it was. We see how distressing it would have been. And we see just the level of salvation that's involved. And now perhaps we understand better also those statements in Chazal that somewhat blame Chizkiyahu for not then saying Shira, right? You're saved personally and nationally and governmentally after you had every expectation that it was all over, that you're going to lose and you're going to be destroyed. And yet, you don't manage to say Shira. So that's a lesson that's involved here. And I think it's part of Chizkiyahu's persona. And we're going to see in the rest of the parak that he has difficulty with that aspect of it. He's very good about trusting Hashem. He's very good about turning to Hashem for help. But it would seem to be that he also has some sense of himself. So he thought he could decide whether to have children or not in order to avoid a bad future that was truly a bad future, that was in fact a bad future. He thought he had the right to take his own steps to avoid that bad future. And as we see, that was one issue. And then now, when he gets saved, we don't see Shira being sung. And then we'll see in Perek Pasuk Yud Bet, we'll see the next incident that will also confirm these ideas. Ba'etahi, Shalach Berodach Baladan ben Baladan Melech Bavel Sfarim Uminchayel Chizkiyahu. The king of Bavel sends scrolls and a present to Chizkiyahu. Ki Shamai Ki Chalach Chizkiyahu. And he heard that Chizkiyahu had been ill. Now the Radak assumes that it wasn't that he heard that the main thing wasn't about his being ill. The main thing was about his being healed. So why would you think that? And you think that, as Rashi says, because that's the thing he would have been aware of, that he's off in Bavel, and all of a sudden the sun moves backwards 10 degrees. He has this whole story that he used to get up and eat and then go to sleep for much of the day, and when he woke up, it was morning. So he assumed that his advisors let him sleep all night, and therefore he got very angry with them, and then they say, no, that's not what happened. The sun just magically went back, and then he says, why would that happen? And he hears that it's because of Chizkiyahu getting better. So that's part of a whole genre in Chazal, and a question to think about is how much of that we accept or think about or see as literal truth. But it's a whole genre in Chazal of assuming that miracles that Hashem does and events that Hashem does in Eretz Yisrael are known to the rest of the world. And obviously they would be known to the rest of the world because of their theological importance, because they are a vehicle for people coming to understand Hashem's power in the world. So the question is how much of that happened. So here this would be suggesting that he'd heard not only about the illness. The way you read it in the pasuk, it sounds like he heard about the illness because word gets around that Chizkiyahu was ill. Perhaps word got around that Chizkiyahu, even though he was ill, had managed to in some way defeat Sancheiriv, and that to Bavel, which is even further from us than Ashur, would certainly be a striking event worth paying attention to and worth noting. So it could be there's some of that going on. But in any case, he sends messengers to Chizkiyahu. Vayishma alehem Chizkiyahu. So when they come, Chizkiyahu is very excited. He listens to them, and he takes them on a tour of the palace, of his storehouses, of his silver, his gold, his spices, his good oil. Chazal think that Shemen HaFaisimon, that was from Yericho, that was a special oil that only existed there in Israel, and all of his vessels, all of his all of what he owned, his armor perhaps, and everything in his storehouses. There was nothing that he didn't show them in his household, and in his Memshalah, and in his kingdom. So, Pazi Yudad, Vayavoy Yishayahu HaNavi Al HaMelech Chizkiyahu, Vayomri Elav, Ma'amru HaNashim HaEileh. Yishayahu comes to Chizkiyahu. There is, by the way, a tradition But after Chizkiyahu got better, Chizkiyahu said, I agree and I will now have children, that Yeshayahu offered him, Chizkiyahu, his daughter in marriage, and that he took him up on it. So that now, in this relationship, as we watch it go forward, Yeshayahu is also his father-in-law, not just the Navi. And the hope was that between the two of them, they could raise a child who was going to be good and serve Hashem in the proper way. So now Yeshayahu comes to him. What did these men say to you? Where did they come from? So here is the error, as Chazal point out, as the sources point out. Right? This is always a trap, not always, but this is often a trap when a Navi or Hashem comes to you and says, and asks a question like that, to which they should have known the answer. Right? So Rashi points out, this is one of three people who Hashem checked on them, and he found them, they didn't understand what was going on, and they didn't react properly. There was Kayin, there was Chizkiyahu, and there was Bilam. So Kayin, Hashem says, where's your brother Hevel? And Kayin just says, I don't know, am I his keeper? When he should have said, Hashem, you know everything, what are you asking me for? You obviously know what's going on. And Bilam too. When Hashem says, who are these people? And he tells them who the people are. And he should have said, Hashem, well, obviously you know who the people are. They're from your nation even. Here too, when Yeshayahu says this to Chizkiyahu, now here it's a little different because it's not Hashem doing it, so perhaps there's more room, I mean, there's less blame that Chizkiyahu doesn't notice it. But when you get asked a question like that, part of the way you're supposed to answer is with the humility of understanding this is a Navi, and therefore the Navi quite possibly knows what's going on. So Rashi suggests that Chizkiyahu should have said, you are a Navi and you're asking me. But instead, Chizkiyahu is very proud. That's what Rashi understands it. And he says, they came from a far land, from Bavel. So in a previous chapter, we noted the Ramban claimed that the first Korban Bayit, the first Galut, is the Galut of Vayikra, because it never promises there that it will be a nation whose voice you don't know or you don't speak, whose language you don't speak. So I just wondered, because of this pasuk, whether Bavel being the vehicle of our exile, of the southern kingdom's exile, at least in the first Bayit, whether maybe that's not true, maybe that's showing that, in fact, even in the first Bayit, it was a nation they didn't know. Now, eventually they did know them, but here at this point, when the exile is decreed, they're a faraway nation. So Chizkiyahu is proud. What's he proud of? He's proud that he's having an impact on a faraway nation. Look at this. They're so interested in me. They're from a faraway nation. They came to find out about us, to hear about us. He's very proud of himself. Yeshayahu says, so what did you show them? They saw everything in the house. Show them everything in my storehouses. He says, listen to the word of Hashem. They'll take everything that's in your household and that your forefathers stored until this day. They'll take it to Bavel. There won't be anything left. Rashi points out it's midah keneged midah. He showed them everything, so they're going to take everything. So the punishment is because of something that Chizkiyahu did here, although that something is not fully clarified, but it seems to be something along the lines of that Chizkiyahu was inappropriately proud and inappropriately taken with showing off to the messengers from the king of Bavel, showing off what he had. And he doesn't say to them, you know what, I was only saved because of Hashem, and let me take you to Beit HaMikdash, let me show you there, and then in that context, show them what Hashem has blessed him with. And of your descendants that will leave your loins, meaning that will come after you, that you will give birth to, they will take them to Bavel, and they will be sarisim, either officers or perhaps, someone in Chazal think, perhaps actually eunuchs, in the throne room, in the castle of the king of Bavel. Chazal, Rashi and Radak, but Chazal identify these as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, right, who were well known because they get thrown by the king of Bavel into the furnace and they survive. So that's an interesting tradition because it highlights some of the paradoxes of the Chizkiyahu family that we're seeing here. Chizkiyahu is the paragon, the paradigm, the best example of somebody who trusts in Hashem. He gets extra years added to his life because of this trust in Hashem. So in those senses, he has succeeded in terms of the goals of becoming an Obed Hashem, becoming one who trusts in Hashem. He gets saved from Ashur for that reason as well, when there's reason to believe that he was on the verge of being exiled. We won't see this, but when we start learning together Hosea, So Hoshea is a Navi around this same time, and so is Amos, and so is Micha, and there's reason to believe that all four of those were around the same time, culminating in the time of Chizkiyahu. So we learn them separately, we don't realize it. Three of them are in Treyasar, so they're minor prophets, and maybe we don't have full attention to them as well. But in terms of atmosphere of the time, it suggests that this was a time of crisis. There were Nevi'im all over the place, major Nevi'im. Nevi'im were going to make it into Tanakh, all over the place, trying to help the people to recover or to change and to avoid the disaster that's coming on them. And they only succeed at the last second with Sennacherib and with this illness. And with all of that, Chizkiyahu avoids that and therefore is great in that way. And yet, also has this problem. They are exiled at a young age, and yet they are steadfast in their connection to Hashem, and they therefore get saved from the furnace. So it's this dual-sidedness to it that we have a problem with, that we see Chizkiyahu is great, and he has great faith in Hashem, and he therefore gets rid of the Bamot and all the things like that. But there is this lasting flaw that will send his descendants into exile. And Pasuk Yud Tet shows some of that, I think. Pasuk Yud Tet, Chizkiyahu Yeshayahu, Chizkiyahu's response is, Tov Divar Hashem Asher Divarta. Okay, fine. And Vayomer Haloim Shalom Vemet Yabiyamai. As long as there's peace and truth and good things in my time, that'll be okay. It's a strange response. Why doesn't Chizkiyahu care about the future? Right? So I'm not sure what the answer is to that. I think it's just a difficult pasuk. Chizkiyahu's response is a difficult pasuk, but it's possible that if Chizkiyahu is as we've portrayed him, if he has this ga'ava that Chazal blame him for in showing off the melech to the kings of Bavel, it may be that he says to himself, well, I've done mine. You know, as they say famously in the French Revolution, après moi le déluge, which is before the French Revolution, I'll do what I want. After me, who cares? It doesn't quite fit my image of Chizkiyahu. Another possibility, it seems to me, is that Chizkiyahu had been prepared to die at the age of 39, childless, and to think of this as being the end of his life, and he was now saved, and he had been in a crisis, a national military crisis, and he'd been saved by that, and he had a whole campaign to rid the land of idol worship and of the Bamot and of all these things to really change the direction of the Jewish people's education. Chazal think that everybody knew all of the halacha at the time because he required, absolutely required everybody to learn, and he threatened death to those who didn't learn, who didn't study. So with all that, I think it's possible that his energies had been exhausted, and that when Yishayahu comes to him and says this, he says, okay, that's the best I can do. I'm done. I have no more energy. I have no more abilities. As long as things will stay okay in my time, that's the best that I can do. I don't know if that's true, that should have been that way. I think Chizkiyahu might have had more energy than he realized. But it at least explains the pasuk, meaning the callousness towards the future, it seems to me odd, unless he sort of run out of energy in his own experience. And Pasuk Chav and Chav Aleph suggests that to me, because even though this happens in the 14th year of his reign, that he gets better, so maybe a year later, the messengers of Bavel come, 2 years later, nonetheless, he has 13 years left. And yet, now we're at the end of his life. Yet, Divrei Chizkiyahu v'chol gevurato v'asher asa et ha-brecha v'et ha-te'ana v'yaveh et ha-mayim ha-ira ha-lohim ketuvim al sefer Divrei Melech Yehuda. Everything else that he did, including the pools that he made, including the aqueduct that he made, right, that we go into, all that is told you in the history books of Melech Yehuda. V'yishkav Chizkiyahu v'avotav v'yimloch menasheh v'no tachtav. He dies, and his son Menashe becomes king, and that's it. So we hear nothing about those last 13 years of Chizkiyahu's life. I would suggest that it's because they in fact had nothing in them, because Chizkiyahu has run out of steam. He had a remarkably productive rule, remarkably productive reign, but he's run out of steam, and that's why he reacts to Yishayahu the way he does, and that's why this is really functionally, for our purposes, the end of Chizkiyahu's reign. And so in the next chapter, we'll learn about Menashe, a remarkable turnaround from this. Have a great day.